We like to get out there and tell people about this technology. We look after things like the Cilium website on behalf of the project and also eBPF. And I could tell you what it stands for, which is Extended Berkeley Packet Filtering. We love to kind of tell people about this technology that we're really excited about. And eBPF is something that really grabbed my attention, you know, a few years ago. And now I get to work with the world experts on it. It's fantastic.
Welcome to another edition of Cloud Unfiltered. This is a special edition at KubeCon in Paris.
Bienvenue à Paris.
Yes. And I have my guest here, Liz Rice.
Hello. Hi. Thanks for having me.
From Isovalent, which is in a little bit of a transition now, right?
Yeah. I mean, the acquisition by Cisco has been announced now for a few weeks. We haven't closed yet. Hopefully... I mean, who knows? By the time people are watching this, maybe it will have closed.
Absolutely.
Excited to become part of the Cisco family.
And we're absolutely excited to have you. So I think it's going to be an amazing synergy. So I'm very excited about it. So you know, we've been in around this whole eBPF train for a while now. You know, there was actually a movie that was actually really, really good. I watched it.
It was
amazing. It was like a Netflix thriller for the tech world.
The production values on that were just amazing. I was so impressed with the team that put it together.
Absolutely. Chad and team, they were amazing.
Fantastic team. And really, you know, we got all of the people involved right from the beginning to come and tell their stories and you know, bring their perspectives. You know, because a lot of that is from the Linux kernel world, and it's really nice to kind of see those people on screen and hear their, you know, recollections of what it was like back in 2014, 2015, when this was first being put in the kernel. And yeah, it was great. I love doing that.
Yeah. So, I mean, to back up a second. So let's explain to people who you are, who don't know in my listening audience, if that's even
good
possible.
Good point. Yeah.
And I did forget to mention that. So why don't you introduce, you know, what you do at Isovalent?
Yeah. So my role at Isovalent is Chief Open Source Officer. Myself and my team look after our community, essentially. We work, you know, very heavily on the Cilium project. All our engineers are working on Cilium open source as well. We engage with the foundations. We like to get out there and tell people about this technology. We look after things like the Cilium website on behalf of the project and also eBPF. We love to kind of tell people about this technology that we're really excited about. And eBPF is something that really grabbed my attention, you know, a few years ago. And now I get to work with the world experts on it. It's fantastic.
Yeah. So explain to people what eBPF is in layman's terms, because some people might not know what that is. So for my listening audience.
Yeah. So most people want to know what it stands for.
Yeah.
And I could tell you what it stands for, which is Extended Berkeley Packet Filtering. Mm-hmm. But you can forget that because it's so much more than packet filtering now.
Yeah.
We really think of it as just a standalone term. What it really is the ability to run custom programs inside the kernel. And the kernel is the part of the operating system that interfaces with hardware. We don't really think about it very much if we're developing applications, right? You know, we just think, oh yeah, we can open a file or send a network message or whatever. But in reality, our applications have to ask the kernel to help with all those things that involve hardware. And if we can run custom programs inside the kernel, we can see all these interesting things happening. We can influence those things happening. We can block some of those things happening for security purposes. We can get involved with network messages, which is really the basis of the Cilium networking project.
Yeah.
And it's a really powerful platform sitting inside the kernel to be able to observe everything that's happening in a machine.
So this was something that has been there, but kind of expanded. So I think, if I remember correctly, it was like, you know, IP tables kind of stuff was kind of like...
You can use it to replace IP tables.
Yeah, it started out with like a filtering mechanism is what I want to say.
Yeah, I mean, that was the original
mechanism. Intent.
Yeah, was this idea that you'd be able to make kind of dynamic decisions about which packets you were going to filter in or out of an observability flow. And so, you know, there's a little bit of decision making there. There's a program there. The inventors of eBPF, Alexei Starovoitov and Daniel Borkman, they kind of had this idea of extending that to do more things, not just filtering packets, but what other things could we?
Now, how does that come about? You're playing around with it. You see there's something cool, and you're like, you know what? Maybe there's something tangential to this that I could figure.
I think so. Yeah, I think Alexei had a particular problem that he was trying to solve, and he kind of, you know, realized that perhaps this was going to be a good way to solve that problem, and he came up with this idea of running a kind of fully fledged instruction set inside the kernel and having a virtual machine essentially to, well, initially interpret, and now it's compiled, execute those instructions. And over time, you've been able to, well, the set of things that you can do has extended, the set of places where you can attach these programs has extended. And it's now become this incredibly powerful. In fact, if I want to kind of preempt a talk that I'm doing on Friday with my colleague, John Fasterbend, and the talk's titled EBPF, Its Abilities and Limitations, The Truth. And to cut to the chase, we are going to show that there is no limitation to what you can do with EBPF today.
Wow.
John has written an implementation of Game of Life in EBPF, and that is basically, you know, it demonstrates Turing completeness and the ability to sort of continue processing an arbitrary amount of data. And it's pretty fun.
That's amazing. I mean, when you think about it, you know, I love, and one of the things I often talk about on this show is how things came about, how they evolved, how the, you know, what made somebody, you know, kind of bang their head on the wall so many times when they're like, there has to be a better way.
Yeah.
And so I love the origin story of like, you know, why this stuff occurred.
Yeah. And I think also, you know, Daniel particularly was looking at it from the networking side and working with other people who founded the Cilium project, realizing that you could do things like hook into the networking stack and bypass IP tables and bypass parts of the stack and you know, drop packets, if you, you know, according to some dynamic policy. So, yeah, I think, you know, little by little, it's gradually grown into this incredibly powerful environment, if you like, the platform.
Yeah. I mean, it was so popular. And we were just talking, you know, pre-show that you know, probably, you know, a couple past KubeCons ago, it was like the talk. Every KubeCon, there's kind of some theme that is prevalent. And and really, that was the main one. And I'm not saying it's not still, it's very, very prevalent. But, you know, there seems to be a theme each year. And EBPF was just so, you know.
Yeah, and we see a ton of projects now out there using EBPF for lots of different purposes, which is fabulous.
Yeah, absolutely. So how does that translate to what happens to Cilium? You know, what are we taking advantage of there?
So Cilium really focuses on networking, although we kind of surround that with security and observability specifically of networking. And I can come to Tetragon, which takes it even further, but we'll park that for a moment and come back to it. But
don't give my audience everything at once, come on.
but really with Cilium, I mean, I think the vision right from the get-go was this idea that, you know, if you're running these multiple containers, they have kind of virtualized networking that can be done so much more efficiently with EBPF, because you can create these sort of dynamic, very, very short connection. You know, you don't need to run through the whole kernel networking stack to pass a packet from one place to another. You can potentially pick it up with EBPF and put it somewhere else. And because we can not just manipulate or redirect packets or drop them, but we can also manipulate them. So that allows us to do things like load balancing, allows us to do things like, you know, routing packets depending on the content. And increasingly, we want to push that kind of networking-related functionality into the kernel where it belongs in the networking stack. So if you cast your mind back, you know, several years now, TCP used to be run in user space. Yep. And now nobody expects to run TCP for themselves. And nobody expects to, you know, configure their own TCP stack. Just expect the platform to take care of it for you. And as we have like increasingly complex networking requirements from applications, all these things like, you know, gateway API, things that have traditionally been associated with service mesh, like, you know, load balancing or canary rollouts, a lot of these things we're increasingly able to do with eBPF. Some of these things we don't do in eBPF today, but I think more and more of that functionality is moving in that direction where it can be super efficient.
Which is amazing for multiple reasons now, because, you know, I come from working with Istio, working with, mm-hmm. you know, different service meshes and things like that. And really one of the things that I'm always concerned for the community, especially people getting into it, is the amount of different elements that you need in like a Kubernetes stack you need in. So if you could have more of those things in less solutions, that and make it less complex for people, that to me is always on my mind these days.
Bill Mulligan in my team did a fabulous, he's great. he found, there was a really, I want to say it was XKCD, it might not have been, but it was a cartoon that has all these like layers of the stack. And, you know, you can basically cross them out and put Cilium in place instead. And he, you know, he kind of repurposed this cartoon. And it's so true. You know, there's probably half a dozen different things that previously maybe you had a separate tool for each of those things that Cilium can now take care of for you. And in a very kind of efficient, straightforward way. I mean, I'm doing a talk later today about cluster mesh, and cluster mesh is all about running workloads across multiple clusters in multiple clouds. And really, you're just putting an annotation on a service to say, yeah, we're going to share this across clusters. And it's kind of almost too easy. You know, the first time you do it, you think, really, is it that easy? And that's, you know, the power of Cilium and the power of eBPF, making things, things shouldn't have to be complicated. Not everything needs to be, you know, super heavyweight and complicated. And if we can make things easy to use and simple and efficient, all to the good.
Yeah, you know, the one thing that I did love about the whole Kubernetes kind of topology and things like that was annotations were so powerful.
Uh-huh.
You know, and I love when you can take advantage of those things to do other things. And it's just getting smarter and smarter about, you know, all these solutions out there that can just do stuff under the hood that you don't even have to think about anymore. And things like that show the power. I mean, I'm dating myself, but, you know, I was a network engineer when I first started out, and, you know, I worked with service providers, and we were doing, you know, BGP to the service and BGP to the edge, and, you know, and all this kind of complexity. And you're still doing those things now, but now it's coming to this, you know, this kind of deeper layer. And it's easier to configure. It's easier to maintain. It's, you know, it's GitOpsable, if that's a word.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, BGP is another example of something that's moving into Cilium. So we now have the ability to announce pod IP addresses with BGP, for example. And it's a whole other, you know, it's a component that you don't need to have a whole other tool to do. And we like to make things easier.
Yeah, and that's my goal in life is to help facilitate that, you know, to either have guests on that tell, you know, tell how to make it easier,
mm-hmm.
or talk about these products that are solutions that can make it easier, or even just talk about how to get started in, mm-hmm. in something like this that seems so complex to people that haven't been kind of growing up with it like a lot of people in the community have. So it's awesome when there's solutions like this that can just help with that.
Yeah, I do think, you know, for somebody who comes to the cloud native landscape today with, you know, I don't know how many hundred projects there are on that landscape.
It's like 5,000 projects, not CNCF projects, but 5,000 projects on the landscape. Yeah, it's ridiculous.
And, you know, I don't envy them trying to come to that fresh. And
yes.
Well, it must be a bit overwhelming. So, yeah, trying to point out the kind of highlights and, you know, start with Kubernetes. Hopefully, you know, use Cilium for your networking solutions. Yeah. You know, some of the very prominent, you know, Prometheus would be another example of something that kind of everybody uses, and you probably do want to use that for your metrics and maybe don't get overwhelmed by the 5,000 things right from the get-go, because nobody can learn them all. Right?
Yeah, I mean, you have these people out there that either their CIO or CTO has told them, we want to be cloud first or cloud native or whatever it is. And you're like, yeah, I heard of that thing called Kubernetes. I'm going to check that out. Mm. Oh, what's a CNI? Oh, what's a CSI?
Yeah.
Oh, what are these 5,000 different projects? Yeah. And by the way, you know, I got it up and running, but now I have this thing called prod that I want to do.
Yeah.
What kind of policies do I need? What kind of, you know?
Yeah. And you mentioned before we started recording about platform engineering as a theme. And I think that's exactly speaks to this kind of idea of, we just want to give people a platform. We don't want our developers to have to think about all these details. We just want them writing business applications and being able to run them in the cloud.
Yeah.
And I think that's really what platform engineering is aiming to do. And then people, you know, for some people, it's just that kind of developer sort of portal angle. For other people, it's all the way down to networking and security. Yeah. All of those things are constituent parts of the platform that people are going to be using.
Yeah, and I often talk about this, so people are probably getting tired of me talking about it. But I think that a lot of people are concerned with the wrong thing, which is like, how do we set up this platform for our apps? And really, it should be, well, what is your app's requirement, and does it even need a certain platform? What do you need? Do you need scalability? Do you need multi-region? Do you need multi-zone? Do you need, think about your requirements and then back into the platform, back into those needs. And too many people are like, well, I'm just going to create something for Kubernetes, or I'm going to create something for it's. And I think that's kind of the wrong approach. Because really the end objective is that you have a scalable app that you can iterate on fast.
Yeah.
And so what is going to enable you to do that? Then back into the technology stack. I'm not saying it's the wrong technology stack. I'm saying it's the wrong, you know,
ask the right questions in the right order.
In the right order.
Yeah. It reminds me of, you know, when consultancies, you know, and they'll have companies come to them and say, we want this Kubernetes thing. Well, have you thought about why?
Yep. Absolutely.
You know, and there could be really good reasons, but you need to have understood what those reasons are before you start putting the platform together. Yeah.
Yeah. And I mean, it was just like when the cloud providers came out, and every CIO was like, we want to be cloud first. Mm-hmm. Why? and then, you know, they forced that. And so then you had what was called a very, very expensive second data center in the cloud, because nobody scaled it right. Nobody created, you know, different scaling policies and CPU policies and all these things. So it was just a very expensive second data center. So tell us about, you mentioned another element you said we'll get to later.
Oh yes, Tetragon. Yes. So Tetragon is a sub-project under Cilium, and it comes from initially conversations that iSurveillant had had with our customers with the sort of enterprise distribution, and they're seeing, you know, network policy that can block traffic based on, you know, source or destination workloads and Kubernetes identifiers and all this really powerful stuff that can prevent malicious traffic. But then the question is, well, okay, having seen traffic that we want to block, can we tell why it's there? Like, have we been compromised? Has there been some kind of malicious activity that created this malicious traffic? And with eBPF, we can, you know, we know everything about the context, or we can find out everything about the context of, you know, where a network packet came from. If it came from a socket, what's the application that created that socket? What container is that running in? What node is that on? You know, how does that relate to your Kubernetes kind of identities? And so we built and open sourced this Tetragon sub-project in Cilium, which gives you this ability to detect events. So think of it more like runtime instead of just networking, but also runtime events. So it could be network related events from which you can find out what was it that caused this network event, or it could be other things like opening sensitive files or privilege escalations, you know, being able to understand why these potentially malicious things have come about. How did we get compromised? When did this happen? When did this executable start that has opened this really dodgy connection to a cryptocurrency miner? You know, so it's super powerful. And it also, I think this is, you know, I think Tetragon is the only example of this where we can not just detect things in eBPF or in the kernel using eBPF, but we can also block things synchronously from within the kernel. We're doing in-kernel event filtering, which makes it super efficient. There's some measurement being done that was showing some really useful default policies with less than 2% CPU overhead, which is incredibly good.
Yeah, yeah.
Because we can filter out, do all the filtering in the kernel, we don't have to sort of send every event to user space to be assessed and only pass up to user space when there's something that is suspicious. And it's really, really powerful. And a lot of fun showing it to people and getting their kind of like, oh, wow, you can do that kind of reaction.
Yeah, I mean, that's amazing. I actually was not that familiar with that project. So, you know, that's pretty interesting.
Come by the booth and get a demo, yeah.
I will definitely do that, but that's really, really cool. So how are you seeing the, and that's a community project?
Yeah.
And how are you seeing the community kind of ideate off of that? And...
Yeah, I mean, one thing that springs to mind, I know there's a talk this week about using Tetragon as a kind of honeypot. And it's a really interesting project where they're detecting malicious events and using that to create a kind of open source database of threats, like real life threats that are happening out there, which I think is really, really great. I mean, there's not a lot of open data about real life attacks. So if they publish, you know, real results about what, We talk a lot in security about possible threats, but I think it would be really great to see some data on what are the attacks that are actually taking place.
Yeah, I mean, that's awesome. I mean, when I think about when I was in cybersecurity, you know, there were definitely honeypots still, but they were on a totally different level, you know, and you get different data that you would get, you know, using this. So, I mean, that's pretty cool. I would love to see that project, honestly.
There's all sorts of things I think that can be done with this information, you know, whether it is an enterprise getting that data and putting it into a SIM and having like the forensics, or whether it's about the real-time prevention, or whether it's collating data like this. There's endless possibilities.
It must be pretty cool from your perspective to see what people do with all of this, you know, because a lot of it's probably not what, you know, you even thought about or intended, or, you know.
Well, definitely, yeah. And you know, the team is incredible. You know, the number of times I'm like, oh, yeah, that was a really good idea. You know, whether that's come from, you know, iSurveillance people or other people around the Cilium community, it's always great to see. I just love hearing about clever ideas.
Yeah, you know? I'm the same way, trust me. But I'm curious, if you're creating stuff in the kernel, like eBPF, is there a danger of like, what kind of, you really have to evaluate that code that goes in?
Yeah, well, there's I think the thing that makes eBPF so incredibly powerful is this thing called the verifier, which checks that your code is going to be safe to run.
That's awesome.
Can't tell you whether it's malicious or not, but it can tell you whether or not it's going to crash the kernel, essentially, or whether the memory access is safe, that kind of thing. And that is a real game changer in terms of, you know, if you write a kernel module, it's pretty easy to build something that's going to bring your machine down. It's basically impossible with the verifier because it's going to analyze every possible path through your code and ensure that all memory access is safe, and as expected, and that different operations are done in the context that they're expected to be done in. And it can't stop you. It can't tell the difference between, you know, if I write a program to drop packets, it can't tell whether that's good network policy or I'm just being malicious. You know, how can you tell? You can't tell the intent. So it is very important to only, you know, to run eBPF programs as if you were, you know, doing something with root privileges. You know, don't let just anybody in running old eBPF thing in your deployment. That could be.
Yeah. Well, this is one place where I think the fact that it's open source really does help, because you have a lot of people looking at this. You have a lot of people, you know, verifying it. You know, and it's a big community, so it really, really does help in this scenario.
Absolutely. Yeah. And I mean, we've been having people running Cilium in production in I don't know, thousands of different environments for years now. So pretty well proven, I would say, at this point.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. I mean, I'm definitely a Cilium fan. So I was talking to to Duffy this morning, and he was telling me that if you're interested in a lot of this, there's actually a day that you can come and or there's an online thing that you can do to learn more about eBPF and
all sorts of things. So Isovalent has a whole family of labs. Really great collection of labs, you know, right from kind of beginner, getting started with psyllium, entry level things about eBPF programming as well, right up to some really complex, you know, much more advanced cases. You spin up these labs, explore that particular feature. Some of those labs have like little badges that you can earn as well, which people seem to love. So that's a really great resource that the team have been putting together. And then if you are, you know, you really want to be able to demonstrate your psyllium knowledge, there is a new CNCF certification, a certified psyllium associate exam that is now live. It was announced at the last KubeCon and it is now up and running, and people are starting to, you know, publish their CCA certification on, you know, put it on their LinkedIn profile, and that's fantastic because, you know, it really shows that this is having these certifications, it's kind of a proof point of enterprise adoption in many ways. It's something that people want to be able to say, I know about psyllium. I have not exactly the bit of paper, but the bit of virtual paper to prove that I'm, you know, I have some expertise in this area, and that's valuable for their careers. And I think that's pretty cool.
So if we're getting towards the end, so if people wanted to learn more about psyllium or get involved in the community, that's even a better question. What do they have to do?
Well, many different routes into the world of psyllium. Psyllium.io is the website. That's probably a great starting point, and we have all sorts of resources there. There's a weekly developer meeting. We have myself, Duffy, and some other folks around the community host a YouTube show on Fridays called Echo, which is eBPF and psyllium office hours, kinda, if you squint. But yeah, we try and cover all sorts of things about psyllium and eBPF projects around the community. So that's kind of a nice way to sort of virtually meet people, because we do it live, so it's always lovely when people comment. If you're here at KubeCon, we've got the Psyllium booth, we've got an Isovalent booth, there's, you know, all sorts
of... Tetragon?
Yeah, well, Tetragon is in present in both, so it's part of Psyllium, Okay. There's loads of talks from all sorts of people around the whole community this week. There's, I want to say there are 26 Psyllium talks.
Wow, that is amazing. That must make you feel good.
Oh, yeah, yeah. and it's fantastic to see, you know, something that, I mean, I've only had a small part in building Psyllium. It's, you know, it's absolutely standing on the shoulders of giants here. But to see that then being taken and other people, you know, creating content about it, building talks, building, you know, sharing their learnings about it is great. You know, it takes on a life of its own.
That's amazing. So we are here at KubeCon. What interests you these days? Is there something that you're excited about? Is there something that, you know, that you've just walking around that caught your eye, you know?
Well, it's day one, so I haven't been around the vendor booth yet.
That's
It'll be interesting to see what's out there. I mean, it's very clear that AI is a big topic this year. I personally feel a little bit like I don't want to get too distracted by that. I think the infrastructure requirements of that could be really interesting, and the scale that people need to operate at are really really interesting, and I'm kind of intrigued to see what networking and security related problems, you know, how they evolve in this kind of world where we're doing a lot of AI model training LLMs and so on. There's going to be interesting to watch, but I definitely, you know, the world of eBPF is where my heart lies right now.
Well, that's amazing, and I do appreciate you coming on the show. This has been an amazing episode, and, you know, definitely wanted to have you on for a while, so
glad we were able to do it.
All right, well, thanks again, and we'll talk to you soon.
Absolutely.
All right, thank you.